Welcome to the Kli Yachid Shiur Parshas Miketz. Wanted to take a look tonight. We'll see how much time we have. It's a little bit of an abbreviated shiur, but I wanted to take a look tonight for those who have the Chumash with Mikraos Gedolos, so with the Kli Yachid, at Kli Yachid Perek Membeis Pasuk Zayin, where the Kli Yachid deals with one of the, really central questions in the storyline of Parshas Miketz, the behavior of Yosef towards his brothers when they show up in Mitzrayim. You know, what motivates all of these strange machinations that Yosef goes through, the way that he treats his brothers, he puts them in prison, he lets them out of prison, the Govia, the goblet which is hidden away in Binyamin's sack, what's going on with all of this? So, the Kli Yachid comments as follows, again, starting from the very beginning when the Pasuk says, Vayar Yosef es Echo Vayakirem, Yosef sees his brothers, he recognizes that Vayisnaker Aleya, he makes himself strange vis-a-vis his brothers. He acts like a stranger. Vaydaver Itom Koshos, he speaks to them in a way which is harsh and accuses them ultimately of being spies. Kamas the Kli Yachid, Vine Be'inin Dibur Koshos, with regard to this harsh language that Yosef uses towards his brother, Yishtomen Kol Maskil, any intelligent person will be astounded at this. I realize everyone sitting here is astounded at this, right? Everybody wants to be in the category of being the intelligent person. Every intelligent person is going to be astounded by this. Yes, okay, so we're all astounded. Good. Ma ro Yosef al kocha litzair es oviv v'es echov chino. How is it that Yosef saw fit to cause such anguish, not only to his brothers, his brothers may well, okay, so, you could say, if your brothers throw you into a pit, maybe you're entitled to, to giving them a little bit of a hard time, but how did he do this to his father? He put his father through the Shiva Madurga and him, by everything that he did. How did he do that? So, Umash Shapirish Ramban, she also calls that Kadesh is Kaiwa Chalomos. So the Kli Yachid, as again, oftentimes he does, will quote from the Rishonim, says the Kli Yachid, you probably know the famous words of the Ramban. If you don't know the famous words of the Ramban, let's make them famous now. The Ramban famously writes over here that the whole kavana, the whole intent that Yosef had in treating the brothers in the way in which he did, was because he felt this moral obligation to make the dreams he had back in Parshas Vayeshev come to fruition. He had dreamt of the fact that, again, essentially his father and his brothers were all going to come and bow down to him. Here, his brothers came and they bowed down to him, thinking that he was the second in command in Egypt. So Yosef thinks to himself, okay, not bad, most of the chalom, most of the dream has been fulfilled, but I still have to bring down Binyamin to bow before me, I still have to bring down my father to bow before me. So Yosef acts in a way which, under normal circumstances, we would say is cruel, and, really hurtful to his father, not to mention his brothers. He does all of this in order to enable the dreams to come to fruition because there's some kind of obligation. The dreams are Ashtikol and Nevuah, and he has to do whatever he can to make the dreams come to fruition. That's the Ramban's classic explanation of why Yosef acts in the way in which he did. So the Kli Yachid is bothered by this, as many other people are also bothered by this Ramban. In Yirtzeh Hashem b'kiyumam, heimo yiskaimu me'asmam. Good. God sends you a nevuah in the form of the dreams. Let's even say that the dreams are called a nevuah. So God is telling you that He's going to do this. It's not your role to proactively make this happen. Kodesh Baruch Hu gave you a sense of what the future is going to bring. Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to make this happen. You just have to sit back. You're not mechuyev to do things, especially things that would be considered to be cruel and hurtful under normal circumstances. You're not mechuyev. You're not obligated to do those things in order to make the dreams come to fruition. So the Kli Yachid is not buying into the perspective of the Ramban. Again, it doesn't bother the Kli Yachid not to buy into the perspective of the Ramban. The Kli Yachid doesn't feel the need to say, I is a Rishon, I have to, whatever he says goes. The Kli Yachid is very happy, very content saying, look, this is what the Ramban says, but very difficult to understand, respectfully. Sorry? So Kli Yachid is in the 1500s. He's already, he's from the early Achronim, but nonetheless, clearly on the Achron side of the line, so to speak.
You're saying a prophecy doesn't have to come true?
No, I'm saying that if you're the recipient of a prophecy, you need not take any Prolactis.
You don't have to follow, you don't have to do what the prophecy says.
The prophecy isn't telling you that you have to do anything. The prophecy is saying, if you get a prophecy, right? You know, you go to sleep tonight, you get a prophecy that says the Mets are going to win. Right? So it's a miracle season. Right? So you get this prophecy, the Mets are going to win. Right? So you can just say, okay, good, the Mets are going to win. Or you can say, okay, I have to find out the next time the Mets are going to play. I have to go onto the ball field and I have to try to, you know, kick the pitcher for the opposing team to make sure that he's incapacitated, and, you know, the Mets are going to have to win. No, we don't assume that you have to do that. You know, we don't assume that a prophecy that you get means that you have to somehow act proactively in order to make the prophecy come to fruition. You're just, yeah, Kodesh Baruch Hu is sharing with you for whatever reason that this is what's going to happen. So why does Yosef feel that he has a need to go ahead and do things, you know, to make the prophecy come true? That's what's bothering him. The Kliyokot attempting to answer this question breaks up the question into two parts. First of all, how could Yosef have not told his father? Right? Again, that's part of the Ramban's kasha as well. The Ramban says, look, I mean, okay, we understand he didn't have email. He couldn't send a letter, you know, all those years, 22 years. Okay, once he becomes second in command in Mitzrayim. So, you know, for the 9 years till his father comes down to Mitzrayim, couldn't have sent a letter? You know, Egypt to Israel is so far, right? The border is so non-porous that he couldn't have sent a letter through. So says the Kliyokot, the first thing we have to understand is how did he not reveal to his father the minute that he got on the throne that it's me, it's Yosef, I'm fine, you know, everything's good, wish you were here. You know, why did he send the Chacha postcard, you know, to Eretz Yisrael? So says the Kliyokot, Yosef understood that Yaakov and the Avos were recipients of Nevuah, and that clearly God had hidden from Yaakov Avinu the fact that Yosef was still alive and that Yosef had been brought down to Mitzrayim. And says Yosef to himself, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for whatever reason, has chosen to conceal this from Yaakov Avinu, it's not my place to reveal this to Yaakov Avinu. We actually find a similar kind of thing in Rashi, quoting Chazal, with regard to Yitzchak Avinu. It's sort of the flip side of things, right? Rashi brings in the pasuk of Vayevko So Aviv, right? His father wept for him, so Rashi says it doesn't mean that Yaakov wept for Yosef, rather it means that Yitzchak wept for Yaakov. Yitzchak was privy to a revelation from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that revealed everything was going on, but Yitzchak was also sworn by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can't reveal, this is confidential, you can't tell Yaakov what's going on. Now, why would Yaakov Takanak be the recipient of all this? So Yosef understood that this was Mido Keneged Mido. And as Chazal say, Yaakov had stayed away from his own parents for 22 years. He had engaged in what the Gemara considers to be a lack of kibud av va'em. And, you know, Yaakov in turn was being punished by being separated from his own son amidst much tsar for 22 years. Yosef understood that it would be wrong for him to reveal that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself had not revealed. So let me comment on that for a moment. Let me just read one line. Let me comment on that for a moment. Ki maso b'sichlo shenigzar alavim tzarchov beis shonim shleimim miyom liyom. Yosef maso b'sichlo. He saw in his mind. Not quite clear what that means, but he saw in his mind. He understood. You know, he realized that his father had been subjected to a divine decree to suffer for 22 years to the day. Keneged osan chov beis shonim shlekiyei mitzvos kibur aviv. You know, to correspond to the 22 years where Yaakov was not fulfilling his obligations towards his father. And the minute those 22 years were over, that's Yosef, without missing a beat, pulled off the mask, said, Ani Yosef, right? And but he knew that there was this divine gzeira that he wasn't allowed to reveal himself earlier so as to allow Yaakov to suffer for those 22 years. Now, let me just comment on that for a moment, because on one level one can say the Kliyokar has fallen into the very pitfall that he accused the Ramban of falling into. In other words, Kliyokar essentially says concerning the Ramban, look, good, so you get a prophecy, Who says it's your role to make sure that the prophecy is going to be fulfilled? You know, the Mets are going to win. Good. So you don't have to go onto the ball field and kick the pitcher for the opposing team in order to make the Mets win. You know, it's probably not going to help. You know, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the Mets to win, well, have the Mets win. It's not your role to, you know, to get involved. So by the same token, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to punish Yaakov Avinu, Gesundheit, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbon. Why do you, Yosef, see it as your role to aid HaKadosh Baruch Hu in doing that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu will figure out a way, you know, in which he can make that happen. So I think the answer to that question is twofold. First of all, there's active assistance versus passive assistance. In other words, the Ramban is saying that Yosef HaTzadik proactively engaged in acts to bring about the fulfillment of the Chalomos. According to the Kli Yalkut's interpretation, Yosef, in carrying out God's will that Yaakov should be punished, Mido Keneged Mido, doesn't have to do anything. He just has to passively not reveal something. Right? So I think that is a significant difference between the Pshatim. Point number two, I think that the acts of Yosef as put forward by the Kli Yalkut, and clearly the Kli Yalkut holds that Yosef did the right thing in not revealing to his father and enabling the Mido Keneged Mido to be carried out, I think the Kli Yalkut would say that that approach is only relevant and appropriate when one knows that you're dealing with people who are typically recipients of nevuah. Meaning, you know, let's say in our own day and age, right? So let's imagine a scenario that would unfold like this. So, you know, a son is taken away from his father. The father thinks that the son, Rahman al-Litzlan, is dead. You know that the son is really very much alive, but you say to yourself, you know, I have an inkling that the father probably deserves to be punished in Shamayim for X, Y, and Z. So you know what? Let me add to his tzaris, you know, and punish him mido keneged mido by not revealing to the father that his son is actually alive. I find it hard to imagine that the Kli Yalkut would condone such behavior, because again, even though it's passive in nature, but nonetheless, it's still cruel. In other words, you have information that could make this father rejoice, and you're willfully withholding it because of some kind of, you know, religious cheshbon that you have. Okay, you know, don't be so firm with your religious cheshbon. Just tell the man, and, you know, let him get on with it. I think the only reason that the Kli Yalkut can say that this is acceptable behavior for Yosef is because Yaakov constantly is the recipient of nevuahs from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the fact that Yaakov is not getting a nevuah over here is proof positive that HaKadosh Baruch Hu proactively wants him not to know. Meaning, you know, you and I, in our context, I you know, we're not recipients of nevuah. I can't divine what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants somebody to know or doesn't want somebody to know. I have an obligation to deal with the facts the way I see them. Right? If I know that I have information that, you know, that by withholding from you, I'm causing you great sorrow, so I should share that information with you. But here, precisely because Yaakov is always the recipient of nevuah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always communicating to Yaakov Avinu. And here, the Ribbono Shel Olam has chosen to not reveal to Yaakov Avinu. Yosef is justified in an era of nevuah in saying, you know what, there must be a plan here. And the same way that, again, if we assume Yosef knew that his grandfather Yitzchak was sworn to secrecy, the same way that Yitzchak is sworn to secrecy, it must be that I'm sworn to secrecy as well, and it's not right for me, it's not proper for me, for whatever reason, to reveal this to my father.
What was the main reason why Yaakov stayed away from his parents? So
right, so he ran away to Haran because Esav was pursuing him, right? But presumably once he got away, he should have been able to come back, you know, much earlier. Again, that's Chazal's criticism of Yaakov. Apparently Chazal holds not so. Apparently Chazal holds that he could have come back, you know, much earlier point, because, you know, he's criticized for staying away for the 22 years.
What Mordechai didn't want to bow down to Haman.
Yeah.
Why did the brothers not think it would be a negative thing to bow down to his wife?
Well, so it's interesting. So sometimes when they tell over the story of the Megillah, they say, you know, a Jew is not allowed to bow to another human being. Right? That's totally not true. I mean, if you just read the Tanakh, Jews are bowing down to other human beings all the time. So Chazal says specifically that Haman either considered himself a deity, or he had some kind of idol that was hanging around his neck. So in other words, there was a specific issue of Avodah Zarah. But in general, to bow down in front of somebody that you want to show respect to, that's very common. If you go through the Tanakh, coming to the king, bowing down before the king, not just bowing, I mean going all the way down, on the floor in front of the king is a very, very common thing.
So mitzvah neged mitzvah is only thing that God can do. Human beings who try to say it's mitzvah neged mitzvah is like Nikonis.
Yeah, no, so again, I think the only way you can explain the Kli Yakar over here is A, the fact that it's passive, and B, that we're dealing in a time where there's Nevuah, and, the failure of God to reveal this to Yaakov Avinu is striking. In other words, the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't give me a Nevuah this morning is not particularly striking.
An individual can't, I'm not saying by Yaakov, can't say it's me to connect and me. I'm acting this way because I decided it's me to connect. I know you did blah, 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 and therefore I'm deciding that it's appropriate to do the same thing back to you.
Right.
Is that appropriate? Is that nekama?
No, typically speaking, that is nekama.
It is nekama.
Right. In fact, as Rav Huttner points out, that although we say that there's this notion of a halachta bedrachov that we're supposed to imitate the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's not complete that we're supposed to imitate Ribbono Shel Olam. Mahu chanu, nafato chanu. Mahu rachu, nafato rachu. But we don't say mahu no kem venoter, afato, hey, no kem venoter. Just as God is vengeful, you should be vengeful also, right? Kel nekomos Hashem, kel nekomos Sophia. Yeah, okay, now that we don't typically try to emulate. Not every aspect of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hanhaga with the world is necessarily something that we're supposed to, take upon ourselves. Okay, so that's in terms of his father. What about, he passively did not reveal to his father the fact that he was in Mitzrayim. What about his proactive activities, that he took to make the lives of his brothers miserable? What gave him the right to do that? The Karo of Lazer, Umashid Sir Es Echov, that which he made his brothers' lives miserable, says the Kli Yakar, also calls them Limareik Avonam, B'meshe Mochru Achihem, V'godol Avonam Inesso. Yosef had the best interests of the brothers in mind. They had sold their own brother. Now, again, the Kli Yakar follows the position of many Mefarshim. I think the first one to really say this out is the Sfarno, but I think there are many other Mefarshim who say this as well, that the brothers in selling Yosef were not just in debt, engaging in some kind of personal vendetta, like really brotherly love really gone sour. The brothers felt justified in doing what they did. The Kli Yakar points out, definitely not going to get to it tonight, maybe we'll get to it tomorrow night. The Kli Yakar points out that even when the brothers are in prison, and they turn to one another and they say, Ashemim anachnu alachinu, this is probably coming to us because of what we did to Yosef, the Kli Yakar points out, they don't say we're guilty because we sold Yosef. We're guilty because he was pleading with us from the pit and we didn't listen, meaning we were right to throw him into the pit, we were right to sell him, all of that was right, but you know what, we could have thrown him some pretzels while he was in the pit, to just make him not cry so much, it was a little cruel the way that we didn't respond properly to his cries, but the fact that we did what we did with him, no, that was 100% correct. We were justified in whatever we did. Now, so they did an Avera, and they think they're justified, and they have this tremendous sin that they're bearing. So Yosef, out of love for his brothers, says, I'm going to put a protocol in place which will wipe away your Averas. I'm going to wipe away this sin of Mechiras Yosef, and even though it's going to put you through the ringer, in the end of the day, you'll be better off for it because you'll come into Gan Eden with a clear conscience, and that sin will have been wiped away, not just from you, but you as representatives of what's going to become Klal Yisrael. You can't have this stain of Mechiras Yosef pursuing you forever. Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow between Mincha and Ma'ariv, we'll continue with the Kli Yakar, and we'll see the specifics of how the various points in the story, according to the Kli Yakar, represent a kapara, as Yosef very clearly chooses everything that he does to be mechaper for the sin of his brothers and selling. Okay, Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Ross? Okay, so This is part two of the Kli Yakar Shiur on Parshas Miketz. And just to summarize what we spoke about last night, we saw that the Kli Yakar raises the issue, how is it that Yosef acted in such a seemingly cruel and heartless way towards his brothers? How could he not have informed his father of his absence? You know, how could he not have informed his father that he was still alive in Egypt? It would have taken such a burden off of the spirits of Yaakov Avinu. So we saw that the Kli Yakar says, look, in terms of Yaakov Avinu, so apparently Yosef surmised that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not reveal to Yaakov Avinu the fact that Yosef was still alive, obviously this is part of some kind of divine plan that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to keep this hidden from Yaakov Avinu, so Yosef doesn't want to be the spoiler who's going to come along and reveal that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself has chosen for whatever reason not to reveal. What about the fact that he acted in such a tough way with regard to his brothers? So that's where we left off last time. The Kli Yakar writes, also calls the lemarek avonam b'meshim machru achiem v'godol avonam inaso. Yosef's intention was to bring about kapara, atonement for the sin that his brothers had committed by selling him into slavery. That sin, in the words of the Kli Yakar, is godol minaso, is so grievous that under normal circumstances you wouldn't think that it would even be subject to kapara, to atonement. So they needed a ton of atonement, and Yosef was willing to step in at this point to provide that atonement through putting his brothers through the ringer, and that would eventually erase the sin from their record. Now, what we're going to see tonight is the Kli Yakar says that that's not just true in a general sense. All of the specific actions that Yosef took lined up with all of the actions that had been done to him, mamish midah keneged midah, again, not to avenge himself on his brothers, but rather to enable his brothers to achieve a kapara for that which they had done. Before we get into that, let's raise the following question. So I know that you generally have done some kind of avera. Okay? So I figure I'm your friend. How can I possibly show my friendship towards you? Let me do something really nasty towards you so you can get kapara for that avera, and you'll thank me afterwards for that wonderful, you know, act of kapara which I enabled you to have. Most of us would feel that I'm not sure that we would, you know, be so comfortable with that. And truth be told, even if we were comfortable with it, I mean, you know, again, if we're really ma'aminim, we should be comfortable with it, because, in other words, you know, the suffering that we have in this world pales in comparison to however we're going to suffer in the next world for whatever avera that we did, right? So if we're real ma'aminim, we should be comfortable with it. But halachically, am I allowed to be mitzar or somebody else in order to bring about a kapara? Am I allowed to cause distress to somebody, to cause discomfort to somebody in order to bring about a kapara, an atonement on their behalf? So perhaps the answer to that question is, you're right, under normal circumstances, that would not be an acceptable thing to do. I'm not allowed to cause tzar to somebody else, even if my kavana is l'shem shamayim. I mean, the truth is, you see that in a very famous Gemara in Bava Basra. The Gemara says that Satan upnino l'shem shamayim miskavnu. Let's leave the Satan out of it for a minute. Let's try not to bring the Satan into the shir. But the Gemara says that Pnina, the wife of Elkanah, the Pasuk says in Shmuel, Pnina used to taunt Chana, the other wife of Elkanah, because Chana was barren. And Pnina used to make fun of Chana, basically. And so Chazal tells us, why did Pnina make fun of Chana? Basically, her kavanah was l'shem shamayim. You know, she wanted to encourage Chana to go daven, and she was successful. She got Chana to go daven, right? The other problem was, Pnina, with all of her kavanos l'shem shamayim, was punished very severely by the Ribbono Shel Olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused Pnina to lose several of her children as a result of her needling away at Chana. So you could have kavanos l'shem shamayim from here till tomorrow, but if you cause somebody else tzar, l'shem shamayim doesn't help you anything. A very good friend of mine, who was today Rosh Hashiva, once said to me,
that you know, the people he fears most are the people l'shem shamayim. You know, that's sometimes you got to watch out. Like, the guy's not so l'shem shamayim. Okay, yeah, you can deal with him. The guy's l'shem shamayim. Och and veh, you know, he'll be right with you to the ends of the earth if need be. So, you know, good. So Yosef's kavod is l'shem shamayim to bring about kapara from his brothers. But who says that he has the right to do that? L'shem shamayim, you know. So I think that perhaps the answer to that question is that Yosef was in a unique position because Yosef was a melech. Yosef was a king. And we know that the king in halacha is given a great deal of latitude in punishing people in ways that would not be acceptable under normal circumstances. Something called the Mishpat HaMelech. There's a very famous essay from the Ran. The Ran, in addition to being a Rabbeinu Nissim of Spain, the Ran, in addition to being one of the famous biblical Talmudic commentators, also gave drushes, and his drushes are collected in a sefer which, shockingly enough, is known as the Drushes HaRan. So, in the sefer Drushes HaRan, one of the drushes that the Ran gave was that there's really like a dual track in terms of how people are punished. According to Jewish law, there's the Sanhedrin, which functions according to a very, very clearly defined set of principles. But then the Melech has the ability to punish people above and beyond the letter of the law. In other words, let's take the following example, right? So we know that in halacha, if somebody's a murderer, he can only be sentenced to death by the Sanhedrin in a very, very curtailed kind of circumstance. You have to have two Edim who witnessed the murder. The two Edim have to go up to the guy who's about to pull the trigger and say, Reb Yid, you realize that if you pull the trigger, if you kill this guy, you're going to be Chayiv Misa. And not only Chayiv Misa, they have to say that he's going to be Chayiv Sayiv, Hariga B'Sayiv, that they're going to decapitate him. And the guy has to say, I know that, but Afal Pichein, I'm going to pull the trigger. Now, would you want mine getting out of the way? Because, you know, I have a job to do. I have to go kill the guy. Right? A rather unlikely scenario that's going to happen. So how's it going to work? I mean, you know, when are you ever going to be able to convict somebody with that set of parameters? So the Ram says, there's something else called Mishpat HaMelech. Mishpat HaMelech means that the king can say, look, you know, we don't have the technical ability to convict this person according to the Sanhedrin, but we realize he's a murderer. We realize it's bad for society to have this guy running around loose. So by the power invested by me as the king, what we call, you know, in the United States to some extent, executive order, right? I'm going to utilize, hot topic these days, right? I'm going to utilize my executive powers to execute this person, even though, you know, I can't execute him according to the Sanhedrin. So Yosef, he's not quite the Melech, but he's a Mishnah Melech. He's high up enough that Yosef has the right, which the rest of us would not have, to be able to execute and to be able to put his brothers through the ringer in this way, uniquely because of his position as a Melech, and he takes advantage of that unique power which is given to him to be able to achieve a kapar.
Isn't that
I think he can suggest that it would be the same. In other words, that this idea of the Melech, you know, this idea of the special koach of the Melech may not be limited to a Melech Yisrael, but that this is part, you know, the Torah understands that this goes with the job of royalty. Any royalty has the ability to punish in a extrajudicial fashion. I mean, the MS is, again, even in American law, and again, we're very far from a monarchy here, but the notion of an executive order is something that we have even, you know, even in American law. Again, not to the same extent that a monarchy would have it. You know, you can't just summarily have people's heads rolling. But in a classic monarchy, you could, you know. And
could he only take this revenge only based on
so I'm not sure. I think you can make the argument that even according to you know, that's just part and parcel of the position of a melech, you know, on whatever kind of melech you are.
There are some European countries that punish the sins committed in another country, but it's not really universally accepted. This is a sin committed in a different country.
No, so I'm not suggesting that he's utilizing his powers to punish them for the sin of Mechiras Yosef. In other words, the classic melech can mamish do whatever he wants. In other words, forget about, you know, a modern day democracy where, you know, if you committed a sin in Poland, you can't be punished for it in Ukraine and you know, like, and the like. A classic melech can execute you if you sneeze the wrong way. So, in other words, Yosef is utilizing that ability which he has, you know, the unfettered power of the melech, to say, look, I don't want to take advantage of the brothers, but I do want to impose something on them which is ultimately to their benefit, i.e. to enable them to get a kapara. Again, I'm not, you know, this is not his misusing his power or abusing his power. He's utilizing a very unique power that he has to bring about something that would be a desirous result for them on a spiritual level. This is a suggestion. Okay, what about the specifics of this kapara? So, writes the Kli Yakov, Karav Azapirish Rav Yitzchak Abarbanel, when I just said that, you know, the whole, all of the machinations that Yosef goes through are all to achieve kapara for his brothers, this is all very similar to what the Abarbanel writes in his commentary. Vehinini Mosif Advar Lefarish Kol HaPratim Vakoros. Let me match it up, though. Let me match up every prat, every detail that Yosef imposes on his brothers with something that Yosef experienced at the hands of his brothers. First, Yosef accuses the brothers of being spies. Right? Says the Kli Yakor, truth be told, the brothers accused Yosef of being a spy. In what sense? Well, because Yosef was a tattletale, you know, spying on his brothers and bringing back to Yaakov Avinu the reports of, you know, what he perceived them as doing and doing wrong. And in fact, says the Kli Yakor, it was the brothers' perception of Yosef as being a holech rochil, a spy, a talebearer, that led them to judge him, you know, and sentence him to death from their perspective. Again, as we pointed out yesterday, the Kli Yakor takes the position which many men of Farshim take. You know, this wasn't just an act of passion that the brothers, in a moment of passion, decided to kill Yosef or throw him into the pit or what have you. This was a calculated din, a judgment that the brothers executed against Yosef. And writes the Kli Yakor, v'chol rochel garim l'shvichas damim. We know that a spy, right, i.e. a talebearer, is someone who can bring about death and murder. So they sentenced him, again, from their perspective, they sentenced him to death because they saw him as a spy. Now the truth is, you know, that identification of a spy as being deserving of death is something which, more or less, is still with us to this day. A spy at wartime, you know, who's spying for an enemy country and passing on secrets to an enemy country. I mean, you know, take a famous example from the Lower East Side. I mean, an ill-fated example from the Lower East Side, but the Rosenbergs, right? nothing against anybody. But, you know, the notion that a fine, nice couple, I think they were from the Lower East Side, no, if I'm not mistaken. Right? Yeah, people probably remember them still, I don't know. But, you know, the notion that a couple, a nice couple from the Lower East Side could be, you know, sentenced to death, you know, electrocuted for passing secrets to the communists, right? If you're a spy, you're subject to the death penalty, right? That's still true to a large extent, and certainly if the brothers perceived Yosef as being a spy who was undermining their status with their father, you could see why they would have judged him for death. Yeah.
The thing is, I thought we said yesterday that their having been tolerant wasn't a problem.
No, they were wrong to judge him for death, but in their minds the only thing that they had done wrong was Bishanano Elena Velo Shamano. Right? They were incorrect. They were wrong to judge him to death to begin with. But
so then they never really completely.
Well, no, that eventually they realized they were wrong to sell him into slavery, right? They were wrong with the whole thing. But at a certain point, you know, they haven't yet had charat on that point. So that's the first thing. When Yosef accuses them of being spies, he's really just turning around the accusation which they made against him, which was the whole basis of everything. Number two, Yosef throws them into prison. The prison itself is referred to in the Torah as a bore, as a pit, right? I don't think the prison was like a nice cell, you know, with you know, time where you got out to watch TV and stuff like that. The prison was a pit, mamish, a pit, mamish. Yosef says, "Ki samu al si bavor," they put me in the pit. So by putting them in prison, he was mirroring in an exact fashion what they had done to him by putting him into the pit. And he writes that with regard to the govia, right? In other words, he put the goblet into Binyamin's sack. Alilas hagovia hoisa kadesha al yodo yiyu b'chashash avdus kimoshipasku alasman hu avodim ladoni. Yosef understood that when the govia, when the goblet was found in Binyamin's sack, the natural response of the brothers would be, you know, whoever did this should be subject to the penalty of becoming an eved, should be subject to the penalty of becoming a slave. In fact, they actually go further than that. They say whoever did this should be killed, and all of us should be slaves. But as they bring in the idea of being slaves, again, tit for tat, they sold Yosef as a slave. They should feel what it means to have a psak din of being a slave dangling over their heads as well, right? And you know, they it basically says the Kli Yoker, you know, point for point, everything that the, you know, everything that the brothers are experiencing is exactly what they sought to impose on Yosef HaTzadik himself. And as so, each and every point serves as a kapara for Yosef in one way or another. Okay, we'll, Be'ez Hashem, next week when we resume the Shir, we'll be at the regular scheduled time, Wednesday night following Ma'ariv. So with that, we wish everybody a Freilich and Chanukah. Omer.